The beautiful state of Utah has hundreds of unsolved cases, including homicides, missing persons, and Jane and John Does. Their stories are more than just statistics. They're about lives interrupted and families left without closure. Join us on this journey as we tell their stories and highlight their cases. Stay tuned, stay vigilant, and remember, in the shadows of the Wasatch, mysteries await, and so do the answers. I'm Renee, and you're listening to Utah True Crime. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me on Utah True Crime. So I want to be totally transparent and say that I actually recorded this already, but I realized my microphone wasn't on. So I'm going back and trying to re-record this. This case is about the disappearance of Annette Hill. Her case is currently listed as a missing persons case. However, there has been a confession and the police believe that she is no longer alive. And actually there is a death certificate on file with the state for her, but her remains have never been found. So we are going to discuss the disappearance and possible murder of Annette. And this case actually has mention of a serial killer. And I'm only calling him that because that is what a judge at one of his sentencings called him. If you're familiar with serial killers, you know that they have to fit a certain criteria. I'm not sure this man fits as one, but then again, we don't know how many more murders he committed and that he just hasn't been charged with. So this case is about Annette Hill. But there are two other victims of this person, and I want to speak about them because it directly relates with how Annette's case today and recent findings in her case. So just keep in mind, yes, I am going to be talking about other victims, but this case, this episode is about Annette. So Annette was born September 5th, 1950 in Seattle, Washington. And I'm going to mention that she had been married before only because she sometimes went by her previous married name, which was Cundiff. What I know about her is that she married George Cundiff on December 2nd, 1976 in Honolulu, Hawaii. Their marriage did not last and they later divorced. She graduated from Highland High and the University of Utah, where she received her master's degree in social work in June of 1981. So from what I read about Annette, she was a very loving, caring person who was always concerned about the underprivileged and spent her life helping those in need, not just professionally, but personally as well. She accepted her responsibility for foster children as an opportunity to use her professional training to serve this population. So she was a foster mom and she had a background in social work, which honestly is amazing. It's probably the most ideal situation that a foster child could end up with, someone having this background and more understanding and compassion. So I think that is awesome of Annette. She sounded like a very nice, very caring person. She was very proud of her career as a social worker, and she was also a talented musician. She sang in a choir, and she played the flute and piano, and she loved entertaining her family and friends. So she was like a jack of all trades. She had a very good education. She was a talented musician and played more than one instrument and had like a vocal ability to sing. And she was also a loving and devoted mother. So her daughter's name is Tiffany. And from the time that her daughter was born, Tiffany was the most important person in Annette's life. And it's also stated in source material that Annette was never far from her little girl. Now, this is where our story begins. On Friday, May 12th, 1989, Annette told Tiffany... Now, Tiffany was 11 at this time. She told Tiffany that she would be running to the store and she'd be back in less than an hour. So, I don't know about you, but it is common or was common for people to leave their kids alone. This isn't really weird to me. My mother left me alone at 12 years old. At that age, you're old enough to kind of, you know, make your own food and be without your parent for a little bit. And Annette said that she'd be home in less than an hour. But unfortunately, Annette would never be seen again. Annette's case is one with many twists and turns, like I said, involving a possible serial killer, who is most likely responsible for her murder. Now, this case takes place in Sandy. Annette went missing from Sandy, Utah. So like I said earlier, this case is about Annette, but there are two other victims that we must talk about in order to learn how Annette's case was almost solved. So about a year later, on March 3rd, 1990, a chef named Victor Aguilar, he worked at Marie Callender's in Salt Lake City. He got to work and accidentally surprised two men trying to burglarize the restaurant. Now, this was a shock to Victor, and it was a shock to these men, and this surprise was met with violence. One of the men who was burglarizing the restaurant, his name was Thomas Knofsinger, and he stabbed Victor 5 times and slit his throat. Victor did not survive this attack. Knofsinger was responsible for this murder. Now, in this case, Knofsinger did take a plea deal, which spared him from the death penalty, and he was sentenced to life in prison. At his court hearing, he stated, "I feel deeply sorry for what I've done, for what I've caused," end quote. If you guys know me, you know that I do not believe this person can feel remorse after brutally murdering someone for no reason. And it's just heartbreaking. And Victor's family forgave Knofsinger, but they did want him in prison for life. Liz, Victor's daughter, said, "This man doesn't deserve freedom. He took our freedom away, our freedom to live our life the way we deserve," end quote. And I agree with Liz that this man, he stole from them. I mean, it's awful. So how does this tie in with Annette's case? Well, while investigators were looking into Victor Aguilar's murder, they found Annette's purse with blood on it at Knofsinger's apartment. Now, this apartment wasn't one that he was currently living in, but it was one that he had been recently evicted from. It's strange that her purse was there. We know that she left with her purse, but not her car. So obviously this puts Knofsinger on police's radar for Annette's disappearance. But Knofsinger had an excuse. He said that he was always going through people's cars, car hopping, stealing whatever he could out of cars. Now, I don't think investigators bought this, and neither did Annette's family. This case kind of goes back and forth in time. We've got some things that happen that kind of further along Annette's case, so just bear with me because this case has a lot of kind of back and forth future and past references. So at that time, the Sandy police said that Knofsinger was a person of interest in the disappearance of Annette, but it had pretty much gone cold. They could not find her. They couldn't find, anything. So on March 18th, 1991, Annette's death certificate was released. Now, that's pretty soon after she disappeared. That's only like 2 years later. And I'm surprised that this happened because in a lot of states, you have to be missing for a certain number of years. And it's usually like 6 or 7 years before you can be declared legally dead. So I'm not sure if the purse with blood on it was a reason why Annette was declared dead. I couldn't find that information, but in 1991, her death certificate was released. So fast forward to 2012, DNA tested in a cold case from 20 years earlier linked Nofsinger to this murder. A 17-year-old girl named Felicia Pappas was murdered in 1989, and Thomas Nofsinger was responsible for this. They found his DNA, they tested it, and he was linked to this crime. He was charged in 2012 with the aggravated murder, rape, and forcible sodomy, which are all first-degree felonies, in connection with Felicia's death. Now, the charges of rape and forcible sodomy were dropped as a part of his plea deal. So he's kind of got a trend of taking plea deals, which I don't know if a plea deal should have been offered to this monster, but that's out of my control. So again, he was linked to this murder, this cold case. In October of 2014, Nofsinger admitted that in addition to Victor Aguilar's murder, he also murdered Felicia Pappas, and yet he also admitted to killing another woman a month later. That is how Annette's case is tied into this. Only after was that he was caught for this 1989 murder in 2012 did he say, "Oh, and yeah, I killed another woman a month earlier." I don't know. It's just really strange. So, a little bit about Felicia's disappearance and murder. She was last seen April 6, 1989, leaving the Cushion and Q Pool Hall on South State Street in South Salt Lake around 1 a.m. She was alone at the time and was reportedly going to walk to her home in the area of 4600 South and 100 East. Her body was later found outside of an office building near South 600 East. She had been sexually assaulted and strangled in a desperate fight, so police could tell that she put up a fight. At this court hearing, her family was there, and they openly wept as Deputy District Attorney Vincent Meister read the details of this case. This was a random meeting. Nofsinger did not know Felicia, and he really did not have a motive to murder her. He just did it. And to me, these are the scariest cases covered in true crime because they're random. We have no idea why this person did it. We don't know really the reason behind it. And I think that's what's so hard for families with cold cases is there's no why. We don't know why in a lot of the cold cases, and it's heartbreaking. Although I recently learned that you're 80% more likely to be murdered by someone that you know. And that is maybe just as scary or scarier than random. Now, Carl Pappas, Felicia's mom, stated this to Nofsinger: "I'm glad you're never going to get out of prison because that's where you belong. You're not a man. You are an animal." End quote. And I really agree with Carl. This man is, he's an animal. He's an absolute monster. So bringing it back to Annette, as police looked into Felicia's death, investigators and Sandy reopened Annette's case. So this was in 2012. Nofsinger was always on police's radar as a person of interest due to the evidence that was found, but there wasn't enough evidence to file charges against him for Annette's disappearance and her presumed murder, which is very frustrating for investigators and family. Then, as a part of a plea bargain, he gave prosecutors details about how he murdered Annette in May of that same year that he murdered Felicia. So he said that he... Well, I'll just kind of start over. We know that her body never has been found, and Nofsinger agreed to be sentenced the same day, and he was ordered to serve life in prison without parole for Papa's death. So this guy's not getting out of prison ever. He was already serving life in prison for Victor Aguilar's death, and he's handed another life sentence for the murder of Felicia Papa. Now, by accepting a plea deal that included admitting to Annette's death, prosecutors agreed for a second time not to seek the death penalty against him. So my question with this, I was thinking to myself as I was researching this, was he truthful in saying that he murdered Annette, or was he wanting the death penalty taken off of the table? I often wonder how many murderers confess to crimes that they didn't commit because they're given a deal for the death penalty being taken off the table. So I'm not really sure if this man was telling the truth about him murdering Annette, or if he knew that he was going to be given the death penalty and the only way to get that taken off was to confess to Annette's murder. It's unclear because her case is still listed as a cold case and as a missing persons. It's not clear whether police actually believe him or not. So this was his story about Annette. Annette had stopped to use a payphone near 900 East South Temple in Salt Lake City. Knopfsinger said he was riding his bicycle home from a bar, and he saw a woman and stopped to talk to her, which would be Annette. He said he didn't know what triggered it, but he hit her. Again, this man is a monster. I don't know if he could be classified as like a psychopath or a sociopath, but this all is so random. It's so random that I wonder if there's some clinical pathology there. So Knopfsinger said that he dragged Annette's unconscious body behind a nearby gas station. He went back to get his bike, and then he went back to Annette's body and strangled her until he could tell that she was dead. He said that he then sexually assaulted her and put her body in a nearby dumpster and covered her with trash. This is heartbreaking because I think part of it at the time, the police could see that's maybe why her body was never found, because we all know that a landfill is a very tough place to find a murder victim. Now, at the court hearing, 3rd District Judge Katie Bernards Goodman read the names of all three victims and addressed the serial killer. She said, "Is that it?" And he said, "Yes." I don't know if anyone believed him, because the judge went on to say, "How many other bodies are out there that you just don't want to talk about because your DNA wasn't on them or their purse wasn't found at your apartment? That's my only concern," end quote. So the judge obviously is thinking what I'm thinking, that he has other victims that may never be connected to him due to lack of DNA or lack of physical evidence, because this man was not going to confess to doing anything else unless he was getting something in return, which was the death penalty taken off the table. At this hearing, a letter to Knopfsinger from Annette's daughter was read aloud, and the letter explained that she missed out on a lot of things when her mom passed away, and her mom missed out on a lot of things with her. Tiffany said she wasn't bitter, she wasn't angry, but at the same time, the person who took her mom's life is where he needs to be, and he'll stay there for the rest of his life. So, as the DA interviewed Knopfsinger about Annette's death, he asked Knopfsinger whether he thinks he would have kept killing if he hadn't been caught the following 1990 murder of Aguilar. And Knopfsinger answered, yes. So really, I'm wondering if there's some clinical pathology. I'm not sure, but this man is a monster and he deserves to be behind bars until he dies. So coming back to Annette, Annette was described as a loving and devoted mother, talented musician, and compassionate social worker. She was a foster parent and an outstanding member of the community. She was last seen Friday, May 12th, 1989, in Sandy, Utah. Annette is a white female, 5'4 and 110 pounds. She was last seen wearing a black jumpsuit, black shoes, a peach-colored ring, and a gold-colored watch. She has strawberry blonde hair and blue eyes. Her hair has red highlights as well. She might use the last name Cundiff. Annette has pierced ears and freckles. She was 38 years old at the time of her disappearance and would be 73 years old today. If you have any information on the disappearance and possible murder of Annette Hill, please contact the Sandy Police Department at 801-568-7200. Thank you. Thanks for listening to Utah True Crime Podcast. If you'd like to support our show and our mission, you can leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. Reviews go a long way, and 5 stars goes a long way in hopes that we can further elevate these cases and get people talking about them. If you'd like to send case suggestions or any other information to me, you can do that at UtahTrueCrimePodcast@gmail.com or on Instagram at UtahTrueCrimePod. Now, I do have a Patreon, and that is $5 a month if you can spare. If not, reviews go a long way. But if you join our Patreon community, you'll get bonus episodes that are ad-free and then other additional episodes as well. Thank you so much for supporting our show, Utah True Crime Podcast. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the after show. So, Annette's case. When I had first seen her name listed on the cold case website, I thought maybe I would just be doing a disappearance and a missing persons. But the more I looked into it, the more that I saw this was a very complex case that involved closing the case, reopening the case, other victims, someone who has murdered 3 people and possibly more. So, although this case might have been a little bit hard to follow because of the timeline, I hope that we can get the word out about Annette still being missing. Her remains have never been found, and I know that her daughter Tiffany would want to lay her mom to rest and, just have her. So it's very sad that when Annette went missing, she was 38, and I can't believe she would be 73 years old now. She would most likely be a grandmother, and that's heartbreaking that first her daughter had to grow up without a mom, and then her grandkids will never know her because she was such an amazing person, and she was such an amazing being. She did so many good things for other people. And on a more personal note, my husband and I just got back from rock hounding in central Utah. This past weekend, we were able to collect smoky quartz crystal, which is super cool. And then we also got obsidian, mahogany, and snowflake obsidian. And we also collected some sunstone. So it was a great weekend to get out, you know, kind of unplug, spend the weekend in Beaver, Utah, out in beautiful, beautiful nature. On the weekends, I really try to not work and just have fun. Part of that is because my real job is emotionally taxing, and there's a lot that goes into it. I work in healthcare. And then another reason is that it's just nice to unplug and not think about true crime or work or anything else. So I hope that you guys also love to get outside because it's such a passion of mine. And that actually leads into another topic that I want to discuss, that is future cases. So I have every single week for until the end of December laid out with what cases that I am going to cover. And if you are a loved one of a missing person and want to be featured on the podcast, please reach out to me at UtahTrueCrimePodcast@gmail.com. I would love to interview you or read a statement that you would prepare about your missing loved one. It would be very appreciative of, and I think that it's best to hear from family members when possible. I also will be doing a few cases this summer that have to do with Mirror Lake Highway and the lakes surrounding Mirror Lake Highway. I spent a lot of time out there. I love it. It's beautiful. So I'm covering two missing persons cases off of Mirror Lake Highway later this summer. One of the cases was a suggestion from Austin Hall. So thank you, Austin, for suggesting that case. And the other one is one that really perplexes me. It's an adult that went missing off of Mirror Lake Highway at one of the trails. So my goal is to go and hike those areas and cover the cases so that I can kind of describe the area. When I talk about Salt Lake and streets, a lot of us are familiar with those areas. But when I talk about trails or wilderness areas, not as many people are familiar with those. So it's my goal to go there, do the hikes, and then cover the cases. Well, I hope that you guys are all having a great week. And next time, please tune in. I've got a special guest on the next episode. She is a loved one of a missing person out of Tooele, Utah. So tune in to hear from her aunt. And I hope you guys have a great week and get out there this weekend and make the best of it. Thanks, and I'll see you next time on Utah True Crime Podcast.